Recordings has now started. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the PPSAI Working Group call on the 26th of August, 2014. On the call today, we have Graham Bunton, Steve Metellus, Frank Michalik, Stephanie Perrin, Don Blumenthal, Griffin Barnett, Todd Williams, Justin Macy, Tobias Sattler, Michaela Nyland, Christina Rosette, Alex Deacon, Lindsay Hamilton-Reed, Darcy Southwell, Chris Pelling, Jim Bykoff, Bill Corwin, and Susan Kawaguchi. Joining us a little bit later in the call will be James Bladell. Apologies for today will be Holly Raich and Sarah Wild. From staff, we have Mary Wong, Marika Konings, Amy Bivens, Danielle Andela, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would also like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. And it looks like Volker Greenman has just joined us as well. I'll now turn it back over to you, Don.
Appreciate it, Terry. Thanks for getting us set up. The weekly, I'm going to keep trying to remember, call for people who note any updates to your SOI as we go along. A couple of things to get started that aren't completely on the, well, one that's not on the agenda, but just a quick update. On the face-to-face session, I'm not sure if we mentioned this last week. I think it happened afterwards, but Thomas Rickart has agreed to be the side moderator, assistant. I'm not sure what the right term is, but he'll be helping out moderating along with the person that ICANN has hired to run the session. I assume that most people, if you don't know, facilitator is good. Thank you, Gailey. Even if you don't know Thomas, you know of him. And I'm really glad he stepped forward or agreed to, or answered the call anyway. Planning for this is, for it is going on really well, I think. There'll be a call to get the staff and Thomas and I'm blanking on the outside person's name, but get them on the same page in September. We'll add Graham, Steve, and need of the process after that. And just keep, I got to stop breathing chat when I'm talking. We'll keep you all up to date as we go along. The agenda says we'll start with F1. I'd like to begin really with what's on your screen there. We were talking on the planning call yesterday, and
did we lose you there, Don?
Don, you're not audible at all. You are. We hear fragments.
Graham should take over.
I think it's actually Steve's turn. Let's give Don.
Okay, is this any better?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay.
We can hear you now. I can.
You're back.
All right, great. We were talking yesterday on the call, and just the question list under Category F is much longer than any other of the categories we've looked at. and a lot of the pieces circle back on each other. We've already discussed some of the things really come up much later in the category. So please take a look at this, and as you're addressing points in F1, keep in mind that we'll formally talk about them later. The point you're making may be formally addressed later. I'm not saying don't raise it, but just in terms of keeping the conversation moving, just keep in mind the flow. And if topics might be more addressed later on. Having said that, I look at this list, and I think I've got a question up front, the extent to which we'll have much discussion at all on some of the later ones. I hope that wasn't completely obscure or internally contradictory. The idea is we will be talking about things, and just keep these questions in mind in terms of what should be addressed now or later. Somebody, I think, anticipated what I was just going to request, which is bringing up the template for F1. Mary distributed this yesterday, and I just want to begin with the point that was highlighted. And which we discussed online after the call last week, how do we go ahead with addressing our terminology? Early in our life cycle, the idea of publication, disclosure, whatever had been raised, but really, now it's time to really decide how we're going to apply different terms, such as reveal, publication, disclosure, both in terms of how we conduct our discussions for clarity, and then ultimately the final document. Are we going to call for a completely different? Are we going to call for abandoning the term reveal? So, are there any comments right up front on the best set of terms that we should be using? I think the last one that was suggested was no comment was publication. Which is full, tell it to the world, in the WHOIS databases versus disclosing, but not posting. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve. I'm getting an echo here, but I'll try to persist. I think I'm fine with these definitions. Question is on the use of person, and we should just be clear that that includes a legal person as well as a natural person. The registrant might be a legal entity. The customer might be a legal entity. But with that footnote, I think these labels make sense and will be helpful to us as we move ahead in Part F. Thanks.
I appreciate it. James?
Hi, James speaking for the transcript. Wanted to agree with Steve and perhaps even suggest, since the WHOIS field typically also asks for organization, if we might consider saying, you know, person, legal entity, or other organization, if we want to be specific and align it to the field in WHOIS. Thanks.
Great. Stephanie?
Thanks, Don. Stephanie Perrin for the record. I'm being a little nerdy here, but please bear with me. Reveal is not really a noun. So when we say publication means the reveal, what we're really talking about is revelation or disclosure. I understand all these terms are loaded because you've been using them for years, but if we're coming up with definitions, can we say revelation of a person's blah, blah, blah? Or you, if you
I'm just thinking of the baggage of the word revelation.
Means to reveal. You could do that. But
thanks. I'm sorry for interrupting there. I thought you would it stopped.
Just responding to Stephanie and Kelly for the transcript. Stephanie and I have argued about this for the last 2 years, on and off. I understand where she's coming from, because it's down to the terminology that's been used for the last, I don't know how many years, is misleading and, well, in typical ICANN fashion, fairly impenetrable. I would object to changing the terminology simply on the grounds that that would actually lead to more confusion for people who have been trying to follow this, but I think a good compromise would be to explain in a footnote or elsewhere exactly what is meant by the term. I mean, you know, there's two terms that are used with respect to who is, with respect to who is privacy, proxy, and various other things that are kind of specific twists on words from the English language that take on a slightly different meaning, and I think providing a clear explanation as to what they mean within this context would be helpful. Thanks.
Okay. So I'm going to ask, I've got to flip my audio method here to phone. Let me call on Kathy, and then if it takes a few minutes, if Steve, if you could take over.
Hi, Don. Hi, all.
Kathy.
Per the chat, what I think James just got it too. I think we're talking about three categories: a legal entity, an organization, and a person or traditional individual. So I think we've got it there. So thank you very much.
Okay, this is
right.
Steve. Don, are you back?
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, no, Steve, please pick it up. I've got a.
Okay,
take it over. I've got to switch over to my phone.
Okay, I see Stephanie's hand up. Is that a new hand, Stephanie? I think you're on mute, but. Okay, the hand is down. So, so are we now looking at publication means to reveal a person's legal entities or organizations, paren, and then go on from there. I mean, that's not, it's a bit awkward, but I'm sure we could, you know, we could move the phrases around if it reads more fluently, but we have added in legal entity or organization, and you said to reveal rather than the reveal of. I think that's kind of where we've come out on this, unless people have objections to that. Okay, it's getting some traction, so perhaps we could leave it at that, and if people and we could accept these working definitions of publication and disclosure. I think if we go back to the questions that were posed, at some point there may be issues about whether the rules should be different for publication or for disclosure. In fact, quite likely they should be, but at least I think we're clear now what we're talking about when we use those words. And I see Kathy's recommendation that we talk about publication after disclosure, which I'd welcome other people's views on that. That seems to make sense to me, since the main issue here, or the first issue, is under what circumstances is this information revealed to a complainant or a third party that believes this And then the second issue is, what are the circumstances under which this is revealed to the world through publication and, in effect, so kicked out of the privacy proxy program. So I think it makes sense to address them in that order. So let me just ask if people, if we are done with these definitions, at least for the moment, whether people have comments that they wish to raise on question F1, bearing in mind the other questions that will be following here. And I see, if you scroll down through the document, there are provisional answers given to some of F1 by some entities that are represented on this call. And if any of them would like to talk about what their provisional responses are, I see got some of the legit script people here. We have some IPC people here. We have some NCSG people here. I'm not sure we have an ALAC person here, but if any of those would want to kick this off, that might be one way to get started on this. See, James has his hand up, and Kathy. So, James, why don't you go ahead and we'll get started on this.
Thanks, Steve. James for the transcript. And actually, I was going to suggest something similar along the lines that you were saying, if we could perhaps get a volunteer from each of the groups to maybe walk us through their response. But even more, I think, relevant would be, since these responses may be a little bit dated, if anyone believes that their responses have changed since they were originally submitted, due to some of the conversations that we've had, or maybe the changing in light of the refinement of the definitions, or something along those lines. So I was just kind of going to float the idea that if anyone has any notices that their responses need to be modified at this point. I don't know that our constituency submitted a unified response on this, so I don't think that I have anything to offer in that regard, but I just thought it might be a helpful way to go forward. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, James. I don't think your stakeholder group has an entry in this chart, but I think it would be helpful if there are any providers of services who want to talk about how they handle this now. We do have, I think, the staff compiled some of the policies that are in existence now. I don't know if that document is accessible, but immediately. But it could be useful to talk about how this is being handled now by individual providers, because obviously that could be very helpful in terms of setting accreditation standards. But let me turn to Kathy, who's next in the queue. Kathy, are you with us?
Okay, sorry, Steve. Another call coming in that I had to decline. So I'm actually happy to wait for the providers to talk, because I think the operational side of this would be great to talk about. So I can pause with you but to talk about the present before we talk about the future.
Okay, well, thank you. This is Steve.
Okay.
I don't know if it has to be in that order, but I see Don may be back in the saddle again here, so I'm happy to turn gavel back over to him.
Makes sense. And could we get that document back on the screen again? I can't see it anymore.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if they're switching to the compilation document or not, but.
I am back. I'm just trying to listen for a second and figure out exactly where the conversation is. So I just kind of just picked up where Kathy was suggesting she would defer to Ryder. So if I could go to James, and then I'll figure out what you're being deferred to about.
Hi, this is James speaking for the transcript. Thanks, Don, and thanks, Kathy. I wasn't really prepared with anything. I guess I would refer back to the slide deck that we presented. I think it was myself, and I think was it maybe Volker and Graham and maybe some others presented earlier on. But I can at least, you know, just kind of give a rough overview of how we handle these types of requests now, which is that there has been a change recently. In that, you know, requests to, well, you know, first off, I would say that for us, reveal was publication, because if someone, a customer of our service, was found to be violating our terms of service, then we would simply cancel the service, which, of course, had the practical effect of publishing their contact details into the public WHOIS database. Now, as far as requests for reveal, I think we've clearly had two tracks on this, and then a special case that I'll mark with an asterisk. The two tracks would be, you know, just a general third-party request for reveal, you know, hey, I don't like what's going on with this website, tell me who it is. Usually those would be... you know, those requests would be denied unless there was some sort of documentation, like a court order or something like that, demonstrating that we needed to comply with that request. I think that we had a separate approach for dealing with requests from law enforcement, particularly law enforcement in our jurisdiction, that being the United States or Arizona or other jurisdictions that we operate in and have relationships with. We had a fairly informal relationship for quite a period of time where a member of law enforcement would request the information, and you know, upon review, we would either publish the details or relay the contact information to law enforcement as part of that investigation. We have increased that a little recently. As a result of just some recent incidents, we now request that law enforcement give us some, you know, some indication, objective indication of due process, whether that's a court order, a search warrant, a national security letter, or some other documentation that indicates that it's something beyond just a hunch or an investigation, but something that demonstrates that there is a formal process underway. And then we would of course comply with that. And then finally, the special case is, and I don't know if this falls, maybe it's, my knowledge of our charter is probably worse than it should be, but, you know, with the, in the case of receiving a, response, noting that the, Privacy Proxy Service is being named as a respondent to a BRP filing, we would typically clarify those by reporting the Privacy Proxy customer's information to the naming them as the respondent and removing the Privacy Proxy Service from the UDRP procedure, and I think that would be maybe the one example where a non law enforcement third party would compel a response or a reveal from our service. So that's just, I mean, that's a rough, very rough overview of how we would handle these requests. And, you know, I think that I don't have our terms of service in front of me, so I think that aligns with what we do. But if I've got something wrong with the details, then please refer to the actual documentation and not the things that I'm just shooting from the hip this morning. So hopefully that's helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, James. This is Graham. I'll speak again briefly while Don catches up. Don, we're just in talking about publication and disclosure, we were just sort of wanting to find out what service providers are doing today in this respect, and then we'll dig into what people would like to do in the future as from the comments on the charter question. I'm going to echo much of what James just said. It seems remarkably similar to how our privacy service operates. A lot of the requests we'll get, we'll discover, that that domain is doing something against our terms of service, so that happens somewhat often. And then, we have direct contact with law enforcement, and we do try and make sure that there is some sort of evidence of due process there before we do any sort of action. That's more or less it. I would think it's quite similar, but I would also say that I think TUCAS and OpenSRS and GoDaddy operate a pretty high bar service, where we're pretty careful about how we operate. Thanks.
Thanks, Graham, for the quick overview. I was back, but I couldn't remember where the unmute button was on my phone. So it sounds like we've moved ahead from the definitions into the substance of just when to reveal. I'm using it in a verb form, Stephanie. When to reveal, I guess it's a baseline. And when it either should or shouldn't be left to the discretion of the privacy provider. I'm just making sure that I'm not missing something in the chat here. From what I've heard here, we've been focusing on law enforcement and how to address their when they are making the request to reveal. Is there more discussion on that, or should we be looking at, say, non-law enforcement? And again, we're talking baseline, where proxy privacy providers should be required to publish or disclose. I'm going to try to force myself into using that set of terminology. Steve?
I think Kathy was ahead of me in the queue, but...
Okay, I thought that was an old hand. I apologize. Kathy, was that an old or a new one?
I was waiting for the proxy privacy provider, so it's a current hand.
Okay.
Okay, so great. I think what Steve had asked a really good question, which was kind of a summary of positions submitted by the different groups, as well as whether those positions have changed in light of some of the discussion over the last few months. So I wanted to respond to that because I think our position has developed and grown a little bit. So this is for NCSG, non-commercial stakeholder group, and we really are very concerned about both publication and reveal. And right now we'll separate the two. So disclosure, when we say reveal, we generally mean disclosure to a third party. And so we're very interested in seeing what the due process procedures are and what the jurisdiction is. So recent events have painfully shown us that what is legal to report in one country is completely illegal to report in another country. And the disclosure of a reporter, a blogger, to an entity outside of his or her jurisdiction may mean death. And that's a real problem. and also imprisonment and other things, as well as for families. So we're concerned about what the jurisdiction is, what the process is for revealing someone's identity. Also, I wanted to remind everybody about a discussion, actually a number of discussions we had a while ago, and see how we can incorporate them here, which is proxy privacy providers having the option at some point of a publication, going back to publication in the Who Is, publication for the world, versus the option of a takedown, where the domain name just disappears, rather than showing the world who was creating that potentially political speech. And we do have a new question to add to that list of questions that were there, which is, let's say we do allow or reveal a disclosure to a third party. Are there any limitations then on what the third party can do with the data? Can the law firm take it and post it on their blog? I doubt they do it, but do we want to think about imposing any limitations when the data, the identity and location and contact information of an organization, individual, or a company is revealed to a third party? Should we try to impose, not that we can completely impose restrictions, but should we even try? And so I'd like to see that added to the list of questions. Thanks much.
Thanks. I'll just move back to Steve.
Yes, thank you. This is Steve, and I appreciate having Kathy's opening statement, if you will, or introductory summary. Let me do the same for the IPC position, and there is at least one area where there's been some change there, and obviously there are also some questions that need further development in what the IPC has put forward. We're focusing really on just one part of this. First, we're focusing mostly on what we're now calling disclosure. So obviously some of our terminology has to be changed here. And we're just focusing on the circumstances in which the disclosure is sought because the domain name is being used in a way or its registration, in effect, infringes trademark or copyright. So that's obviously a subset of the kinds of complaints that could give rise to a disclosure request, but it's the one that we're most familiar with. So our view is that the test should be that if there's a prima facie, that is on its face evidence that that there is an abuse involving infringement of trademark or copyright, cyber squatting, counterfeiting, basically items that are in the list that we've been talking about as far as abusive activities, that would trigger the disclosure process. There would need to be some time standard for achieving that disclosure. We do propose, and I think this is an important point and somewhat responsive to what Kathy's been talking about, that at least in most cases, and probably in the cases that we're most focused on, it would make sense to notify the customer before disclosure and give the customer some opportunity to object to the disclosure, so long as the contact details aren't changed during that period. So that's obviously a process that would need further discussion, but I think that's a significant safeguard against an improper disclosure. Our fourth point goes to the question of, I think, that Don called granularity, that our going in view is, at least, is that if you get a disclosure, you get a disclosure of all the current contact information on file, and that you would be allowed to use that only for dealing with remedying the misconduct or the abuse that's involved. So I think we're basically in agreement with Kathy's last suggestion about some limitations in the case of disclosure on what you can do with that information. And then finally, where we do have a change is on our last point. Our last point states, and this is all in the document that had been up on the screen, the F1 template document, so you can go back and review it. We talked about escalation to publication when the third party is unable to contact the customer through revealed information. And on further reflection, and also because of the discussions that we've had about the providers having an obligation to, when they find out about invalid contact information that they've been given. They have an obligation kind of parallel to what a registrar would have to try to get the up-to-date information, get it corrected, or else cancel the service. That means, I think our fifth point there is probably not as relevant because, you know, if, especially if there's a pattern where there are reveals from a particular biter that turn out to be useless, in other words, that information does not enable you to contact the customer, then that's really an issue of whether they're fulfilling their accreditation standards as far as maintaining up-to-date information. What really is on disclosure, we don't really have a lot of views about the circumstances under which publication would be allowed, except to note that, you know, that's really a question of when can the provider cancel the service and thereby put the data into who is rather than substituting this provider's own data in who is. That's a broad question, and we don't have I think the focus of our answers, our provisional responses, has been on what we're now calling disclosure. In other words, revealing it just to the complainant and just for the purposes of remedying the abuse that gave rise to the complaint. Thank you.
I appreciate that. All the detail there. I just want to just clarify that when I used the word granularity, it was in a I think it was in a message to the chairs list, not everybody, but that is what I was talking about. So I guess I don't know if it matters really. Volker?
Yes, I think for the registrant, in certain cases where he really needs his privacy protected for security reasons, the question of whether to reveal in to the complainant or law enforcement agency or whether to publish the information in the WHOIS is of a very minor circumstance because his information will have been revealed to the entity that he probably did not want it to be revealed to and compromising his security in some form. So the question rather is, in which circumstances should it be okay for this information to be revealed? Now, law enforcement, I think we could all agree, has the most, how do you say it, rights to have that data the data revealed to them, especially if they're in the middle of a criminal investigation. And even there, I would see that this jurisdictional barrier is very important for the privacy service provider to take into account. So if there's a request, in our case, from a privacy from a law enforcement agency that we would not recognize as competent, we would reject their request to either reveal or publish. Which ones do we usually consider competent? That is kind of an established process that has grown over time. A, the location where the privacy service is located. B, the location where the registrar that is using the privacy service is located. C, potentially the area where the reseller to which the registration has occurred is located. And we are very cautious with the location where the registrant is located, because if the registrant is located in what we consider a high-risk area, we would not reveal it to local law enforcement agencies, even though they might come from the same jurisdiction as the registrant is originally from, because we don't believe that we are in a position that we could risk someone's life. Luckily, we have not been in that position of having to make such a decision yet. But that's on a law enforcement level, where we would draw the line.
Thanks. That last piece is quite loaded, obviously. And I will, just to, in defense of my alma mater, just suggest that we be talking about investigations and not specify law enforcement, criminal, or civil. James?
Hi, this is James speaking for the transcript. I actually forgot I raised my hand. The queue has moved on, but my response was just on Kathy's suggestion of restricting what a requester can do or what actions they can take based on a reveal or how that information can be put to use. I understand and support the premise. I don't know how we could enforce or impose that on non-contracted parties in practical terms. My only thought would be that if this is something that we want to, we consider important enough to pursue, that we might consider, some sort of an accredited or a known reporting system where the reporters are authenticated and they would lose that privilege, based on some sort of, determined abuse criteria, which may be outside the scope of this particular working group. But I just wanted to put that out there in response to Kathy, and I fully acknowledge that the conversation has moved on quite a bit from that thread. Thank you.
Thanks. There has shades of some of the ongoing discussions over the years of nothing else, how to identify if a law enforcement agency is or an organization that represents itself as law enforcement, really is law enforcement. I'm just seeing three letters here. So is that Michaeli?
It is. It is I, yes. Thank you. Michaeli, for the record. Going back to Kathy's thing, I mean, at one level, it's like, oh, my God, I mean, it's a lot to be asking a private company to get involved with. I mean, if you turn around to us and say, you know, what you do here will have, you know, the impact of potentially killing somebody, it's like, oh, God, I'm out. Because, you know, we provide hosting, we provide domains, we're not into the entire kind of life and death stuff. And that is a problem. I mean, during our work in the EWG, as Stephanie or Carlton or Susan would tell you, I mean, we did talk quite a bit about the entire concept of people at risk, I mean, based also well on conversations we had with Kathy. And it's a very interesting, it's a very difficult, it's a very awkward thing. I mean, the problem, though, and this is going to what Steve's talking about, is that, you know, from our perspective, law enforcement is one thing, and I'll treat that in a particular way. Court orders are something I can treat in a particular way. But then people trying to use trademark or copyright infringement claims, it's an area which gets quite grey and quite messy, because unfortunately what we're seeing in Ireland and in other parts of Europe is where companies are abusing the copyright and intellectual property laws in general in order to silence people. I mean, whereas under US law you might have that concept of freedom of speech, you don't have a concept of freedom of speech in a lot of European territories. So we see regularly people trying to use copyright and trademark infringement to take down gripe sites or sites that are being used for various campaigns, either in favor of or against particular companies, particular movements or whatever. We've also seen people trying to get access to some of our clients who like to write about organized crime. And there's certain parts of this country where if we were to do that, that person probably couldn't go home in the evening. Thanks.
Interesting. For what it's worth, there have been attempts even in the U.S. to go after gripe sites. Although, there have been attempts. I don't know how often they've been successful.
But the kind of thing we see, Don, is that if somebody puts up a gripe site, let's say if I was to put up a gripe site attacking, I'll pick on GoDaddy because they're big enough and ugly enough, a gripe site in the U.S. would be able to put up a version of the GoDaddy logo, and GoDaddy may not like it, but they would have a particular a level of protection. under Irish law, that level of protection is practically non-existent.
Okay.
So they could say, oh, this is you're breaching our trademarks, our copyrights, et cetera, and take the entire site down.
All right. I appreciate the difference now. Justin?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Great. So I think that I'd just like to jump on to what Michele and Kathy said, that there are definitely certain times where there are lives in a position of danger, but that kind of falls on both sides of the coin. I think that there's a risk if we prevent privacy proxy providers from being able to cease a relationship with a registrant if they know or have reasonable knowledge that there's criminal activity going on. Just like in the situation where a registrar may decide, hey, I'm out, when a website kind of gets to a level that they think that it's probably facilitating criminal activity and may involve someone dying as a result of it, privacy proxy providers need to have the same ability to kind of back away, and they don't have the tools necessarily to shut down the website. I think they're kind of only left with the possibility of maybe notifying and ceasing to provide the privacy layer on the registrant's account, because otherwise they might be stuck in a position where they are knowingly facilitating or being involved with criminal activity, and they have to have a way out of that in our accreditation standards. So that's it. Thank you.
Thanks. James?
Hi, James, speaking for the transcript, and just to respond to Justin's comment. I agree. Service providers, you know, are businesses, and really would rather not be dragged into some of these very complex issues and questions. I think that the way out in many respects is, particularly for our service, I can't speak to the structure and procedures of others, but for our service, you know, if because we are the listed registrant, we have authority, I don't know if we ever use it, but we have the prerogative to cancel the domain name entirely without disclosing anything if we are not the hosting provider. So that's maybe one option that the privacy proxy service might have, you know, aside from publication and aside from just being dragged into some interjurisdictional privacy or fair use or free speech or religious speech type of action, is just to say, you know, I'm the one that's listed as a registrant. I'm nuking this domain name, so, you know, so I'm out of it.
Okay. Justin, is that a new hand?
I think that's his old one, Don.
Okay.
Yep, sorry.
All right. Michele?
Yeah, no, just going, I mean, also speaking to Justin's point, I mean, Justin works for LegitScript, so, I mean, when he talks about life and death, he's talking about, probably talking about fake pharma and things like that. And I think, you know, that's a different conversation, which I think is much bigger and much broader than just simply privacy and proxy. You know, for some of us have agreements with LegitScript or with other entities to do certain things with domain names when we receive notification from LegitScript. That would include us. You know, Black Knight has an agreement with LegitScript and will quite happily remove domain names based on a report from LegitScript. LegitScript on their side better not screw up. I mean, if they tell us to start taking down legitimate domain names, I'll be very, very upset with John Horton. But that's, you know, that's, and if, you know, if, for example, I don't know, somebody was involved in some kind of serious crime, then I think, you know, we might have to deal with that. But that's, again, that's a bigger thing. I mean, if you look at the new TLD contract, for example, there's an entire section within that contract about various things to do with illegal activities, and the same thing has been passed through to the registrar registry agreements in a lot of the TLDs. So I think, you know, this is something, again, which I think is just, it's beyond this privacy proxy thing. And while interesting, I wouldn't want to conflate them all too much.
Yeah, debt conflation is a good point. Before I jump to Volcker, I'll just just going back to the idea that we're looking for a baseline here. I mean, the examples of how things work in practice are invaluable in terms of coming up with that baseline. But what McKelly was just talking about, I think, is a good example of what a proxy privacy provider could do, but where as opposed to where it would be required to do a disclosure, transferring McKelly's example into the disclosure realm. Volcker?
Yes, thank you, Don. Volcker speaking. I think we've touched upon very important points here. The baseline has to be something that works for providers in all countries. And we shouldn't try to be solving problems that are not necessarily who is service provider's purview or a problem that's related to who is privacy service provider. If it's a problem like unlicensed or fake pharmacies, I don't think that's a privacy proxy problem, because you want the domain name down, not the registrant revealed. That's something for the registrar or the hosting provider, in my view. That's not something that the privacy proxy service should be primarily involved with. And even then, laws may be different. For when we talk about baselines, if we have an Indian registrar or a privacy proxy service provider providing services for an Indian pharmacy that is licensed in India but happens to send out their licensed product to the U.S., which may be illegal in the U.S. but may be perfectly legal in India, is that a problem for the privacy proxy service provider? Is that a problem for the accreditation? Is that a problem for the registrar? I would say no, and that's what the baselines would have to take into account.
Thanks. That's a good teasing out of the point I was thinking of. Again, transferring the example over to disclosure discussions. Steve? Steve?
Sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yep. Gotcha.
Okay, I'm sorry. I guess I was on mute. We've heard several references to in the descriptions that James and Graham gave at the earlier in the hour to violations of terms of service for a privacy proxy service, and I certainly think that they should have that these services should have the ability to enforce the terms of service, and that in some cases, again, where they're not serving as the registrar, this may be all they can do to deal with illegal activity that's taking place in connection with a domain name for which they provide this privacy service. But there's also, and again, we heard from the existing providers that this is something they do today. I think that's pretty common for all of the providers, that if you violate the terms of service, you can get kicked out, which in effect, in terms we're talking about, is publication. But there really is a lot of overlap, I think, between those terms of service and the kinds of abuses that we're talking about here. And I guess the issue is if a violation is brought to their attention, will they either reveal to the complainant or publish? Again, from the perspective of the IPC, we're not that concerned. We're not pressing for publication necessarily, but if that makes if that fits better into the model that the service providers are now using, that when they get a complaint like this, they will cancel the service, and as a result publish in WHOIS the contact details. That certainly achieves our goal, although it's broader than what we're looking for. So I guess I think we should just bear in mind that when we have all these references to violations of terms of service, there's a lot of overlap potentially between that and the kinds of complaints that that we're talking about. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. I would. Okay, I'll just go on to James.
Hi, Don. This is James. And I do want to just kind of express my agreement with a lot of what Steve has offered here. It feels like a lot of what we're discussing with some of these very heady, very complex issues regarding, you know, free speech and, you know, free expression and fair use and criticism and what I just made up a term. I should probably go register it, digital asylum, or people, you know, who feel like they can't trust a service provider in their jurisdiction, so they're, you know, purposely seeking out a jurisdiction that they believe will protect their identity. I think these are important issues, but I do sort of acknowledge that if we were to look at the 80-20 rule, they are probably edge cases. And so I think that when we talk about setting baselines, we should probably recognize that there will be some mechanisms necessary for service providers to address these situations when they arise, but we shouldn't let the exception swallow the rule necessarily. And what I mean by that is I just keep coming back to this idea of, you know, providing some level of discretion on how the service provider is going to act situationally, depending on whether this is a intellectual property issue or a pharmaceutical issue or, you know, legitimately an issue where someone's life may be jeopardized by revealing their name, or if the law enforcement is, you know, the FBI or Interpol versus, a different kind of group that is perhaps not a legitimate authority and is simply masquerading as one to persecute the registrant. I feel like we could try to solve those issues in this working group, but that might be folly, and instead we should maybe perhaps provide, and I think this goes back to what Justin was saying, provide sufficient escape hatches for service providers to extricate themselves from these situations, as much as possible, without necessarily jeopardizing or creating a liability by jeopardizing the safety of their clients. So that's my thought here, and it just kind of goes back to tying together, I think, more agreement than not on some of these issues, particularly that third party and law enforcement requests should be treated differently, and even then law enforcement probably has a higher bar that it has to jump over. So thank you.
I see what you mean. Since we're at 11, I'll just take an opportunity for the final word. I agree with what you're saying there, but again, just point out we're talking baseline requirements, but all we're doing is going to be, say, broad brush baseline requirements, and I think that a lot of the discussion we're having is going to be very useful for ICANN staff to play with. I think what we just need to be aware of is how we ultimately be aware of all these issues to guide us when we ultimately draw out what our policy recommendation is going to be. So with that, we're still at 11, so I can say we have wrapped up on time. This has been a good discussion. I see some things we could tease out to start with next week, both on this, but also I think there's a lot of very logical segues in today's discussions to the other questions in F. And let me suggest that I'm not sure that it's going to be very useful to follow F in order. We may want to do some groupings, but we'll talk about that during the week. Thanks for your time, and talk to you next week.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you, Don. Thank
you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines, and thank you very much for joining.